Election Day is behind us, but the mental and emotional toll it's taken is still around for many people. Sometimes the stressor disappears, but the stress doesn't. And that's on top of the stress and anxiety from the pandemic and the economic problems it's created. Plus, you know, daily life. It's a good time to remember to exercise our minds, just like we try to exercise our bodies, and think about the power of things like kindness, compassion, and empathy. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How have you dealt with 2020 stress? Have you taken up meditation or some kind of mindfulness practice? Have you found something to help relieve your own stress? In what ways do you try to exercise your mind or practice kindness? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Richard Davidson is the William James and Vilas Professor of Psychology and Psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin and founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds. Richard, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So many potential causes of stress this year. What, before we get into some helpful advice, Richard, what is your take on our kind of collective stress and anxiety levels right now?
They're pretty high and pretty significant. The research bears that out. There was a recent paper in the Journal of the American Medical Association reporting that in June of this year compared to June of the previous year, rates of depression are more than three times higher in certain age groups compared to a year ago. And so there's no question that this is a time that is very challenging. I think probably for many of us, the most stressful time we've ever faced in our history.
The pandemic, I think, has had a big baseline anxiety level for a lot of people. I think that may have peaked wherever they are on the political spectrum during the election. The election is over, apart from some court cases now. Does that necessarily mean stress and anxiety are going to fade away if that's what had people worried?
No. I mean, one of the things that makes us distinctively human is that we can create our own stress, so to speak. Our minds can worry about the past and anticipate the future. And as a consequence, we really create a lot of suffering in our own mind after an objective stressor, if you will, goes away, like the election. And so there are many lingering consequences as a function of the capacities of our own mind, which can be both helpful and harmful.
Let's talk about that acute stress situation where whatever the cause is, whether it's politics or worry about the disease, a legitimate, maybe stressful thing, but when it gets to be too much and we start to feel those maybe physical symptoms or we just can't make our minds let go of things, how do we start to be, well, first of all, aware that we're in that state, and then how do we start to ease out of it?
Well, those are great questions, and your intuition that we need to first become aware of it is absolutely true. One of the things that's important to recognize is that if you were a complete couch potato and didn't engage in any physical exercise and your posture was not very good, and someone told you to please stand up straight, and stand that way for a while, you might think it's a good thing to do, but you're simply incapable of doing it because you haven't developed the right muscles. And in the same way, our minds are like that. We can't simply let go of stress because we may agree that it's the right thing to do and that it will be helpful. We may recognize that and yet still be unable to do that because this requires a kind of learning that's different from declarative learning. Declarative learning is learning about things. We can learn the value of letting go of a stressor, but that will not necessarily allow us to let go. We need a second form of learning that we call in neuroscience procedural learning. Procedural learning is more skill-based. It's acquired through practice, and it's implemented in completely different brain circuits. And so we need to exercise our mental and emotional muscles, if you will, just like we exercise our bodily muscles in order to strengthen our capacity for resilience. And we could do this. Resilience is something that can be learned, but we need to practice simple strategies that will enable us to build up these muscles.
We're talking to Richard Davidson from UW-Madison's Center for Healthy Minds, talking about how we can learn to help deal with stress and anxiety. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a question for Richard Davidson, if you've learned something from him, if you've used the app that he has worked on, or if you found your own solution to help you break out of cycles of stress, 800-642-1234. So, Richard, I can imagine if I want to, you know, learn to hit a baseball, I'll practice swinging a bat. If I want to learn to play the drums, I'll, you know, practice playing the drums. I can't visualize how to exercise my mind in these ways, though. Talk us through some of the first steps.
So some of the first steps involve, as you were implying earlier, becoming aware of what's going on in our minds and our bodies. And there are simple mindfulness exercises that we can use to become more aware of what's actually going on in our minds and our bodies. And the first step in being able to change things and being able to slowly alter our capacity to become resilient is to become aware. And so there are very simple ways of doing it. We can sit quietly for a few minutes and become aware of our breathing. We can become aware of sensations in our body, and we can become aware of our thoughts and understand them as thoughts, not necessarily who we are. We're not our thoughts, yet we have thoughts. It's like a sky contains clouds. It's not made of clouds. We can see the clouds move in the same way our mind has thoughts that can come and go. And if we can see them as thoughts, it can help to disentangle ourselves from our thoughts so that we can see them and we cannot get so hijacked by them the next time they come around. So these are simple methods. And you mentioned our app. We have an app that we've developed called the Healthy Minds Program. It's completely freely available, and you can download it from wherever you get your apps. And it's a comprehensive program to train well-being that includes four major elements or constituents. And the first we call awareness. The second is an element that we call connection, which is about qualities that are important for healthy social relationships, qualities like kindness and compassion and appreciation, all of which are so important during this pandemic. The third element we call insight, and insight is about self-knowledge, and it's really about getting curious about how the narrative that we carry around in our mind about ourselves, how that narrative actually works. We, at the extreme end of the distribution, there are people who have a very negative narrative. They have very negative self-beliefs. And part of a healthy mind is not so much changing the narrative, but changing our relationship to the narrative so that we can see the narrative for what it is, which is really a constellation of thoughts. And finally, the last component of well-being is purpose. And purpose is about leaning into our true north, our sense of direction in life, and aligning more and more of our everyday behavior around this sense of purpose. And resilience emerges from the cultivation of each of these four qualities. And there are simple practices that we can do that are on the app that teach people to cultivate each of these four elements of well-being.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Frankel is with us in Grand Marsh. Frankel, hi.
Hi. I found what I do to relieve stress for me that works great is I normally write with my right hand, but I've been teaching myself how to write with my left hand by writing words out of the dictionary. And I'm also in the reading the Bible from cover to cover. God bless.
Thanks a lot for sharing those, Frankel. The first one Richard, that idea of writing with your offhand, it sounds like it's going to take a particular kind of, focus, a kind of intentionality that, is that something that can help us?
It's an interesting strategy. One of the things I frequently remind people is that one size will not fit all. Each person needs to figure out what works best for them. And so there are reasons why writing with your non-dominant hand may be helpful. It's a very absorbing activity. This kind of absorbing activity can actually help with our focus. If it's working for you, that's great.
And are there other thoughts like that, Richard, where, we shake up our routine or approach something in a conscious and different way can help maybe shake us out of the negative cycles of thoughts we might have?
Yeah, in general, I would say that that's true. When things become automatic, when we're on automatic pilot, mm-hmm. our minds frequently get lost. We're not actually aware of what we're doing. There was a study published a number of years ago in a very prestigious journal that asked people through their smartphones, with texting them, of course, with their permission, it asked them three questions. The first question is, what are you doing right now? And they checked off from a list of activities. The second question is, where is your mind right now at this moment? And the third question is, right at this moment, how happy or unhappy are you? And this was a study done in more than 3,000 people. And what was found is that the average adult spends 47% of her or his waking life not paying attention to what they're doing. 47% of the time. And when they're not paying attention to what you're doing, these people were significantly less happy. And the title of this scientific paper is A Wandering Mind is an Unhappy Mind. And I think there's something very telling about that. So if we can help to focus our mind, we can improve our well-being.
We're picking up our conversation now with Richard Davidson, professor at UW-Madison, founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds, talking about post-election stress and mental health during the pandemic and how we can help deal with those things. You could join in with your questions and comments, maybe experiences with stress, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go back to our callers, Richard, you mentioned one of the parts of the app earlier, dealt with compassion. And that seems like probably a pretty good thing to think about now after a really divisive election in the United States. Talk a little more about the value of focusing on compassion. And you've even told us about, compassion meditation in the past.
Yes, well, it is a very timely topic, particularly in our country today, where there is such divisiveness and quite a bit of difficulty, I think, in different groups that are on the opposite ends of political spectra interacting. And so compassion really is about taking the perspective of another, putting yourself in another person's shoes. And most importantly, it's about recognizing that every human being shares the same wish to be happy and to be free of suffering. We may devise a solution to that is inconsistent with another person's beliefs. But if we can recognize that people are, for the most part, really trying to do what they believe will be genuinely helpful, I think that we can begin to get past the extraordinary partisanship expand our in-group and decrease divisiveness. And it's hard. It's not something that I think will come easily. It's also not something that will occur instantaneously. And I think this is an area where ideally we really need to begin in children. We know that kids before the age of about 3 Don't make any distinction based on the skin color of another child in terms of their liking of another child, in terms of their trusting of another child, in terms of their willingness to share with another child. After that age, we begin to develop prejudices as a consequence of the culture in which we reside. If we can start early on in life, ideally, and teach children to cultivate kindness and compassion and to build on the propensity that they have early on to begin with, where they don't make distinctions based on the kind of distinctions that are the hallmark of prejudice later in life, I think that we can really help to heal the divide that is so pernicious now in our country. For us adults, it doesn't mean we can't also do things that will be helpful. One of the practices in our app and that's taught very frequently to cultivate compassion is we begin with our in-group. We begin by reflecting on people that are very close to us. It could be our family members, our very, very close friends, our spouses, our children, and bring them into our mind and our heart and envision a time when they may have been having some difficulty and cultivate the strong aspiration that they be relieved of that difficulty, of that suffering. And then we gradually begin to expand that so we can go from a loved one to ourself. It's often hard to do this for ourselves. We can then move on to a person that we might not know very well. It could be a person who is a neighbor that lives near us. We see them on a regular basis. We don't know much about them. It might be someone who works in the same building that we work in or attends the same class, but we don't know much about them. And imagine a time in their life when they may have been having difficulty, even if you don't know about their life in any detail. And then cultivate this strong aspiration that they be relieved of that suffering. And then finally, we move on to the category of person that is what we might call a difficult person, someone who pushes our buttons, not someone who gets us the most angry, but someone who annoys us in whatever way, and then bring them into our mind and our heart in a genuine way. And imagine that they're just like you that they have the same wish to be happy and to be free of suffering. And imagine a time when they may have been having some difficulty and cultivate that same aspiration that they be relieved of that difficulty. And I think that that kind of practice, in fact, we know from scientific evidence that this is a kind of practice that can actually decrease hard-nosed measures of implicit bias. Mm-hmm. Bias that really gets under the skin that's cellular. And so this is a kind of practice which I think is so important during this time that we are all confronting in our nation today.
I want to bring on another caller. Mike is with us in Stoughton. Mike, hi.
Hi, hi, Richard. I just wanted to say thank you to Richard. I've had the app for about 6 months, and then I signed up for the master's course that you and your colleagues are presenting right now. Actually, it's tonight again. It's just really helped me and changed my narrative. And like you said, the other things is it's challenged some of my beliefs. And my wife is pretty happy with it because one of the lessons or one of the work things are about the way you say something. And I've been married many, many years, and she always says, you know, you said that the way you said it. And so I'm really aware now of the way I say things. I wasn't self-aware that I said things in a nasty tone that was sarcastic. And I thought she was just really sensitive to that. And sure enough, I totally changed the way that I my tone to her, and she just loves it.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. We just have a minute or so left, Richard. Yeah, a quick response.
Well, it's beautiful, Mike. Thank you so much. And I'm really happy to hear that you're finding this of value. And the way you describe it, I think, is so perfect. And the fact that your wife is commenting on it is a real testament to the change that's occurring. Wonderful. Keep it up.
And I've been poking around, Richie. You can find the Healthy Minds program app wherever you find any of your other apps, right?
That's right. Yeah. And if you go to the website, tryhealthyminds.org, so tryhealthyminds, all one word, .org, you can learn more about the app.
Thanks for that call. And Richard, thanks a lot for joining us again today.
It is a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Richard Davidson is the William James and Vilas Professor of Psychology and Psychiatry at the UW-Madison and founder and director of the Center for Healthy Minds. We talked about how to find some moments of peace of mind in our post-election and still pandemic world.